Radio Prague News. The concentration of cyanide in the River Labe has dropped below the permissible limit of 10 micrograms per litre. The South Korean carmaker Hyundai has confirmed a major investment in the Czech Republic. And the fugitive Czech businessman Radovan Krejčíř is said to have commissioned a false bill of exchange in order to discredit the ruling Social Democrats. The concentration of cyanide in the River Labe has dropped below the permissible limit of 10 micrograms per litre. Experts from the River Administration say that the present levels no longer present a threat to fish or river life. The concentration of cyanide is gradually declining due to the higher inflow of water from the Vltava River and the fact that river management has been increasing the flow from several reservoirs. The cyanide leak into the Labe from a chemical plant in central Bohemia on January the 9th killed many tons of fish in the river and caused concern in neighbouring Germany, where the Elbe River flows. Environmentalists say the full extent of damage to river life will only become apparent in the spring. The chemical plant responsible faces a fine of up to 10 million crowns. The South Korean carmaker Hyundai has confirmed a major investment in the Czech Republic. According to the Czech internet daily Novinky, Hyundai said in a letter to the Turkish industry minister that it had decided to build its new car plant in Nošovice, North Moravia, mainly thanks to the lowered tax burden. A Hyundai spokesman later confirmed that the firm was sending a delegation to the Czech Republic to sign a contract worth 30 to 40 billion crowns. The new plant is expected to decrease unemployment in the region. Scheduled to begin operation in 2008, the plant will employ some 3,000 people and provide more jobs for people in supplier companies. The fugitive Czech businessman Radovan Krejčíř is said to have commissioned a false bill of exchange in order to discredit the ruling Social Democrats. Interior Minister František Bublan told the commercial TV station Nova that he had information that Krejčíř commissioned several of his accomplices in the Czech Republic with the task of producing a false bill of exchange, which was to serve as proof that the billionaire had lent the ruling Social Democrats 60 million crowns for their election campaign. The mentioned accomplices were reportedly arrested before they could comply with the demand. Krejčíř, who fled to the Seychelles last summer, has not so far been able to provide any evidence to support his claim. I'm Daniela Lazarová, and that's the end of the news.
You're tuned to Radio Prague, broadcasting in English worldwide. I'm Jan Wellinger. Ahead in today's program, Russian-style frosts hit the Czech Republic. How are Czechs coping with the cold? It was a month for woe for Pendolino on Czech rails. Will the famous train get back on track? And in today's one-on-one, Lady Louisa Abrahams remembered. Lady Abrahams, who had remarkable roots to this country and was involved strongly in Czech charities, died last week in England at the age of 95. We'll have an interview with her from 2003. Now, while Australia is fighting a heat wave, it is snow and frost that has been paralyzing much of Europe. In some countries, the mercury has dropped to a record minus 33 degrees Celsius, and with dire effects. In Ukraine, 11 people froze to death in just one weekend, while 20,000 people were left without electricity in Norway after heavy snow pulled down electricity cables. Latvia experienced its coldest night in 100 years. And the Czech Republic, too, has been hit by the sudden Arctic spell, as Dita Asiedu reports.
It's as cold as in Russia, a popular Czech saying in winter. According to Jan Pretel from the Czech Meteorological Institute, the saying literally came true this week.
The cold, the terrible cold is coming from Russia at this moment, yeah, because there is a very, very, very huge and very cold wind, very cold Arctic air mass, which is now reaching in this area of Baltic states about almost 30 degrees. Yeah, and that is the reason why also to the Czech Republic it's coming now a very low temperature. This morning on the region of Silesia, Ostrava region, they were the temperature minus 24 degrees.
The bad news is that there is more freezing weather to come. Roads are already turning into skating rinks, water pipes are threatening to burst, roofs are caving in, trains are delayed, and some schools are thinking of closing down because they cannot afford to properly heat their classrooms. So far, the winter season has claimed at least 12 lives, with the most shocking death last Saturday, when a 15-year-old homeless man fell into a fire that he had made to keep himself warm. He was one of thousands of homeless people in Prague. And yet, says Pavel Pinkava from the city's Centre for Social Services, the Czech capital, where an estimated 30% of the country's homeless are, still lacks the means to come to the aid of many homeless in the cold winter nights.
We do not know exactly how many people we have on the streets in search of a place to stay overnight. This winter, the Salvation Army and other humanitarian organizations have been offering more beds, or at least shelters with chairs. City Hall is also doing everything it can to help the homeless, but its help is limited. It isn't easy to acquire buildings in neighborhoods without sparking protests from local residents. So some people have to find other ways of keeping warm. They often choose unconventional places like night trams and buses, the main train station, or warm water canals.
Doctors have also advised the elderly, children and people with heart problems to stay indoors this week, when night temperatures are forecast between minus 18 and minus 24 degrees Celsius and minus 10 to minus 15 degrees Celsius during the day.
Dita Asiedu there with the story on frost and cold here in the Czech Republic. The first Pendolino train was expected to arrive in the Czech Republic in a blaze of glory. Known for speed and comfort, it was to open a new chapter in the history of Czech rail transport. But the super city trains were delivered late, for which their Italian producer Alstom has paid a huge fine. And much to everyone's surprise, once here, the trains made a bad start in the Czech Republic. They've been dogged by problems, as Daniela Lazarova tells us now.
Seven Pendolinos, for which the Czech Republic paid Alstom of Italy 4.4 billion crowns, that's almost $200 million, were now meant to be whizzing between Prague and Ostrava and on the Prague-Brno-Břeclav line. But in actual fact, only one is running. Four out of five had to be taken out of operation due to software problems. The sixth is being tested, while the last is still waiting for its technical certificate. All in all, a poor show and a major humiliation for Transport Minister Milan Szymonowski, especially when it emerged that the Czech side had signed a highly disadvantageous contract which did not allow it to penalise Alstom properly for the million crown losses incurred.
I shall ask the company chairman to investigate the circumstances which led to the signing of such a contract, and consider whether someone should not bear responsibility for it. This sort of thing must never happen again.
Last week, the minister said that if Alstom was not able to fix the technical problems and have all trains running reliably within a fortnight, the Czech side would revoke the contract, return the Pendolinos, and ask for its money back. The European head of Alstom, Terence Watson, said a team of experts had detected the software problem and he promised that all would be in order by the end of the month. In the meantime, Czech Railways, which has replaced the four Pendolinos with regular trains on both tracks, can only hope that Alstom will deliver on its promise. And in order to find out just where it stands legally, it has asked the Deloitte & Touche agency to look into the purchasing contract and ascertain how much of its losses can be covered by the penalty clause. As for the Pendolino, its reputation has suffered a bad blow, and Czech Railways is now trying to entice clients with special discounts, which will remain in force some time after all 7 trains are, hopefully, back on track.
Daniela Lazarová, and of course you're listening to Radio Prague, where it's now time for the latest in sport. We begin first with tennis and the Czechs' last hope in the women's singles at the Australian Open. 16-year-old Nicole Vaidišová has had her run cut short. On Monday, the talented Vaidišová committed 34 unforced errors and was easily routed by experienced number 3 seed, Frances Amélie Mauresmo. The 26-year-old Mauresmo, an Australian Open finalist in 1999, downed the Czech in a lopsided 6-1, 6-1. Afterwards, Ms. Vaidišová expressed dissatisfaction with her playing, saying she had won what she had expected to win, but clearly had hoped for more. On the other hand, having made the last 16, Vaidišová bested her third-round appearance at Melbourne last year by 1. In ice hockey, Czech players added fuel to wins in the NHL at the weekend, especially for Jaromír Jágr's New York Rangers, looking for their first playoff spot in just under a decade. On Saturday, New York winger Petr Sikora lifted the Rangers in a shootout versus Boston, giving New York the 3-2 win. A day later, the Rangers again dominated, this time against New Jersey. David Prucha's power play goal in the first started the team in the right direction, and both Jágr and Ruchinski had assists later in the game. In the end, the Rangers downed the Devils 3-1. Prucha's goal was his 24th this season. Elsewhere in hockey action, Ottawa Senator Dominik Hašek again proved he's in top form ahead of the Winter Olympic Games. On Saturday, the Dominator, nominated along with Tomáš Vokoun for the Czech national team, stoned the Toronto Maple Leafs 7-0. Speaking of the Olympics, the Czech's national roster for the upcoming Winter Games in Turin, Italy, can boast the most Czech athletes at the Winter Games ever, 82. That's 4 more than competed at Salt Lake City in 2002. Czechs are hoping to do well in an array of different sports, with the games starting on February 10th. Besides ice hockey, where the Czech bookmakers have ranked the Czech team second only to Canada, Czechs will hope to do well in cross-country skiing, ski jumping, and the aerial freestyle, where Aleš Valenta won gold 4 years ago. That's the end of the sport. Now, on Saturday, Roma activists and their supporters gathered at Letinir Písek, the site of a World War II internment camp where more than 300 Roma died. They gathered to protect a sacred memorial and to protest against the gathering of the Czech Republic's National Party, which claims that Roma died in Leti because of common disease, not conditions imposed by a concentration camp. Linda Maštalíš was there and brings us a preview of a longer feature that will air this Tuesday. So, Linda, tell us more.
Letinir Písek, the site of a World War II Roma concentration camp, is in the news again. This time because the Czech Republic's National Party, a right-wing extremist organization, has its own version of what happened at Leti between 1942 and 1945. Petra Edelman, the National Party leader, says that there was no concentration camp there at all. Her views have provoked strong reaction, as we saw at the weekend. On Saturday, shouting Stop Nazism, Markus Pape, a lawyer and human rights activist, tried to intervene against the gathering of the National Party in Leti, but in the end he was taken into custody by police for disrupting an organized gathering. Now the controversy over the Leti site has been further inflamed. Many sympathize with Mr. Pape and are appalled by the far-right party's stance on the Roma, but others say the extremists only reflect wider discriminatory views held by many Czechs in this country.
Unfortunately, to me, it's still a very sad indicator that parties know that the anti-Roma sentiment in this country is a politically successful tactic. They know that it's something they can bank on. Something that they can bank on for the media to respond to, something that they can bank on for to maybe get extremist voters to go along with them.
Human rights activist Gwendolyn Albert there, and her views and others will be all in tomorrow's Talking Point. Bye, Linda. Thanks. And now it's time for this week's One-on-One with Ian Willoughby. It's a tribute to Lady Louisa Abrahams.
Lady Louisa Abrahams, who died last week at the age of 95, was a truly remarkable woman. Born Louisa Kramerova in 1910, she grew up in the Prague district of Bubeneč, where her father ran a hospital. A leading ladies' golfer in pre-war Czechoslovakia, Lady Louisa stayed in the UK, where she'd gone to play a tournament when World War II broke out. She spent the rest of her life in Britain, but always maintained close contacts with her home country. She did great work raising money for Czech charities over the years. 2 years ago, I spoke to Lady Louisa Abrahams at her home in North London. I began by asking her what was life really like in Czechoslovakia between the wars, in the era commonly known as the First Republic.
Wonderful. It was wonderful. Under Masaryk, we all were very, very happy there. My father, who was born in the monarchy, of course, started the hospital in 1896, but he was very happy in the First Republic. Wonderful. Everybody was happy there.
Did you ever meet President Masaryk?
Yes, I knew him very well, because his wife was in my father's hospital. And when I was 9 years of age, in 1919, the president and his son, Honza, who became my best friend later on, were every day visiting her. She was a manic depressive and she was in our hospital. I was very friendly with the president and very friendly with Honza, very friendly.
What kind of a man was Masaryk?
The old man, you mean the father? Wonderful. He was a statesman of the first order. And I think that President Havel was like that also. He was really a statesman also. He reminded me very much of old Masaryk. They were very, very important two people in my life.
There is a question about Jan Masaryk, about how he died. Did he jump? Was he pushed? What do you think?
We will never find out. He certainly didn't like to jump out of the window from 30 meters. And you're also not always dead from 30 meters. And his death was a very odd thing. And we will never find out the real truth. But in any case, it was the fault of the communists. There's no doubt about that.
I read that in 1938, you won a golf championships?
In 1938, I won the Czech golf championship. And then I won many more after that in England. And I was quite a good golfer. And last November, I went into the Hall of Fame of golfers. There is the plaque there on the wall. Sin Slavi.
What was the secret of your golfing success?
I don't know. I just like to play golf, and I was very happy playing golf. I was a tennis champion when I was 18. I beat the Kozeluk sister, which was the greatest day of my life then. I became the junior champion in the Czech Republic, and my ball boy was Jaroslav Drobny when he was 7 years of age, and afterwards he won Wimbledon in 54. So that is quite a history. And then I started playing golf.
What first brought you to England?
I came to England, actually England, and the golf saved my life because I came to England in February 1939 to play golf with Henry Cotton, who was the golf champion then, British golf champion, whom I met in 1938 in Marianskie Lasnie. And he thought that I was very talented and he invited me to come to England to play golf. And I came and stayed with him when Hitler marched into Prague. Hitler killed my entire family, but I was in England, and therefore I survived.
And you married here?
And then I went to buy some trousers because I had no clothes with me. I only came for a week or fortnight here. And I went to Aquascutum to buy some trousers. I met the son of the owner, and there it is. And I married him, and we were married for 48 years when, unfortunately, Sir Charles died. He was a knight commander of the Victorian Order.
I also read, Lady Louisa, that you joined the Czechoslovak Air Force during World War II. Is that the case?
Well, I was in the British Air Force and something called wire service, and then I went into the Czech Air Force at the same time, who really, they didn't have a women's section, but they had a few women, and I became a major of the Czech Air Force.
After the war, you stayed in England. Did you follow events much in Czechoslovakia?
My roots are very, very deep into the Czech country, into Czechoslovakia, into the Czech Republic. I started a business in 1971, an English business, under the communists in Prague. And that was quite difficult because they were trying to do all possible things to get extra money out of us. But I had a shop in Prague under Tuzek's, which was the foreign money business.
Were you saddened by the state of affairs in Czechoslovakia?
I think everybody decent must have been saddened by it. But I never had any trouble with the communists. And I must say, I enjoyed even the time during the communism in Prague. But one was a little scared, of course, and it was terrible, really, at times, you know. There was an awful lot of red tape, and you had to have visas and everything. But I enjoyed even then coming to Prague.
You told me earlier that you were good friends with Olga Havlova and Václav Havel. Could you tell me a little bit about your relationship with them?
Well, my relationship with them was that I started helping Olga Havlova just after the revolution, and I also, during the communist time, I helped a little bit of dissidents, but not really in any political strong way, because I was married, I had children, I didn't want to be locked up by the communists. But as soon as the revolution was, I really went into it quite big, and I tried to collect, as I say, a lot of money. I got 2 ambulances for her, for the Dobra Vule, for the sick children, and I got a lot of money for them. I must say the president was charming. Always, whenever I saw him, I went to some parties afterwards. He had a party for his uncle's 100th birthday, Miloš Havel, whom I knew quite well. He started the Barrandov cinema thing, and he was wonderful. And I went to his wedding. He married a friend of mine. President Havel gave a party for his 100th birthday, and they showed a film which he made in 1922. And he started this Barrandov, which is a big cinema enterprise. And Goldwyn Mayer from Los Angeles came to have a look at it in 1921 or 22, and they copied it because the Barrandov was before Hollywood even started.
And I know recently, before he retired, Václav Havel gave you an award.
I got the gold medal, which was wonderful. And I really should have got it from the president. But by the time I got the medal, he wasn't the president anymore. And the new ambassador in London brought it with him, Mr. Fühle, and gave a wonderful party for me a week ago. And I got the gold medal and the certificate. That is.
What is the medal for, exactly?
The medal is for services to the Czech country, to the Czech Republic. What? Only 6 people, apparently, in England got this medal from Mr. Havel. One is the Queen, one is Prince Charles, one is Mr. Tony Blair, and one is me. I don't know who the other 2 are. So that's a great honor.
Have you ever met the Queen or Prince Charles?
Yes, I know them quite well. I met them when my husband got the Victorian Order, and then we met Prince Philip very often because we did this charity with him. And I saw the Queen when she came to Prague, and I was sitting at the luncheon in the British Embassy at her table, only 6 people at the table. And actually Mr. Klaus was at that same table, who is now the new president in Prague. So I've just written him a letter now.
Lady Louisa Abrahams, thank you very much.
Thank you very much. Thank you.
Lady Louisa Abrahams, who died at 95 last week, remembered there in an interview with Ian Willoughby. That was part of our special 2003 series, Czechs in London. And if you have any thoughts on Lady Abrahams' story or the rest of today's program, why not send us a few words? You can write to us on the internet at english@radio.cz any time of day or night. And interesting comments may even make it on the air in our weekly mailbox program. Also, be sure to visit Radio Prague at www.radio.cz/en to look up all of our stories in sound and text. For now, though, we're once again out of time. Jan Wellinger saying thanks for listening and tune in again tomorrow.